ask MJ to marry me.
A man has to put his wife before himself. Can you do that, Peter?
Yeah, I think I can.
We have some new information. This is your uncle's actual killer. We lost his trail 2 days ago.
This man killed my uncle, and he's still out there.
Everybody needs help sometimes, Peter. Even Spider-Man.
Revenge is like a poison that can take us over. And before you know it, can turn you into something ugly.
The suit. Where'd this come from? The power. Feels good.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Real Talk, a movie podcast, where we want to be your go-to source for ratings and recommendations of past and present films. I am your host, Wes Jones, podcasting from Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Hey, this is Tommy, podcasting straight from Nashville, Tennessee.
The movie buddy Conway, podcasting from Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Hello, Real Talk community. As always, thank you for downloading the episode. We're going to try something new tonight, and we're going to introduce our Guilty Pleasures series. And this is where we'll review and carry on about one film that we feel fits into this category of Guilty Pleasures. And to qualify, basically the movie just has to be dismissed by the majority of critics and or the audience, or when it's looked at in retrospect, it just holds up really poorly. But it also still has its fans. So after we review the film, each host is going to let you know if they think it's a guilty pleasure, if it's a good movie, or if it's just plain a bad movie. So let me bring my co-hosts in here tonight. And gentlemen, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty good, Wes. I've had a heck of a day. It's been nice outside. I'm excited to talk about this fantastical movie that we're getting ready to talk about. How about you, Tommy?
Oh, man. So excited to be here tonight. So excited to get into this movie. I think we're going to have a lot of fun with it.
The movie we decided on first for our first Guilty Pleasures episode is Spider-Man 3, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 3. But before we get rolling on that, we wanted to tell you about a brand new podcast called Strikes My Fancy Podcast. And it was just released on 9/4, and listeners can go ahead and they can get started with the first three episodes. And the podcast covers a wide range of topics, kind of a nothing is off limits type of show, and they really flesh these topics out. And so to help us with our first Guilty Pleasures episode, our special guest host tonight is Kayla from the Strikes My Fancy podcast. Kayla, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, we're so happy to have you. You're actually our first female guest host so far on the show, and honestly, that's a relief for me. Having all these dudes on the show and around
all
the time.
Well, hopefully I can represent and I don't just embarrass my whole, gender.
What I was going to say is it was starting to feel like, all the parties that we used to go to in college with, no girls around. So this is a treat for us.
I'm glad that I can provide some balance.
Don't scare her off, Wes.
Yeah, honestly, I liked all the guys because that's what we were so used to. Our parties were all guys. So I was like, oh, this is what we're used to. This is why we enjoyed it so much. But Kayla, it's great to have you on.
I'm feeling some bias there.
but sincerely, thanks for being here. But before we get started on Spider-Man 3, just let's take a minute and talk about your new show. So tell the audience just a little about yourself and then about Strikes My Fancy.
Yeah, well, I started Strikes My Fancy because I wanted an excuse, really, to just kind of have deep conversations about anything that I found interesting. And it's easier to do it on a podcast than, gather all your friends and be like, so guys, what do y'all think about multiverses and parallel universes? At least you can draw in people that care about the same topics. So I had come fresh out of another podcast that was retired, and I missed it, and I wanted to do my own thing. So I kind of created, I guess, sort of a female Joe Rogan style show. It's not really based on one topic, but it's based around discussion. And so I bring on guests and even some professionals. I have a mental health series, and I'm working with several licensed professional counselors to kind of bring almost free therapy to the world. So I'm very excited about it, and that's in my original release of episodes. You can hear that one. So
awesome. Well, I'm actually a Joe Rogan fan. I enjoy his show, and I think it's great that, you know, you're doing this. And I really encourage our audience to go out and check out her first three episodes. And I think as we go through the movie tonight and you get to hear more of Kayla, I think you're really going to enjoy having her on our show as a host. And we think you'll want to go over and check her show out. So let's take just a minute here and talk about guilty pleasure movies, because a lot of people, they don't even like the term guilty pleasure to describe things. And Bill Van Vagel, who was a guest host on our Cult Classics episode, even said, "I hate the term guilty pleasures, because if you like something, you like it. There's no sense in feeling guilty about it." So my question for all three of you is, what do you think about what Bill said? Do you feel he has a point? Or are you in the mindset that, you know, I can see why a film is not very good and feel guilty for liking it, but for some reason I do like it, therefore it needs its own movie classification?
I'm never going to say to anybody that they don't have a point if they're trying to make a point. So, Bill, don't get offended when I basically say that you're wrong here in like 2 seconds. But what I'll say is, there's just movies that you can watch with the naked eye and you're like, that's not a good movie, but you enjoy it. There are so many of those for me, but and I'm kind of known for that. So let's be real. I won't go down the list. I could list off like 100, but there are movies that you know that are bad, but maybe like I talked about Boondock Saints on the Cult Classic episode. You know you have an emotional tie to, or they're just funny. So I definitely think it can be bad and good.
I'm not one of those people that really goes with the crowd anyway. I grew up like obsessed with Twilight, so I've already I'm well versed in being indulgent on guilty pleasure movies, so this is really not that bad for me. I mean, as far as the Marvel universe goes, it's pretty bad, but overall I have no shame. I'll just watch whatever I want. I'll just call it trash TV and get on with it.
Yeah, and that, Kayla, you make a great point, because that's kind of what I was going to say, is that guilty pleasures movies to me are those movies that, you know, like you said, Gabe, are maybe not the best, but who cares? Like, at the end of the day, if you're being entertained, does it really matter what anybody else thinks? Honestly, we just did a guilty pleasures movie with Deep Blue Sea. I mean, I would consider that a guilty pleasures. You know, a TV show I loved as a kid was 90210. That's a guilty pleasures, you know, TV show. So Melrose Place, I mean, I was really too young for them, but, you know, watch them now and it's like a guilty pleasure again. So I think that a lot of people deep down inside really like guilty pleasures type movie, even if they don't admit it.
Tima, and what about, you're talking about TV shows, what about Family Matters?
Wes, I would just call Family Matters. I don't think that's a guilty pleasure. I don't think it's a pleasure. I think it's just bad.
Family Matters is good family therapy.
Urkel was where it was at.
Urkel, man, that guy. I don't even get me started, Wes. I can't do it tonight.
That was my childhood. Wow. That was the Full House.
Podcast gone to Family Matters and Twilight already. All right, that's it. Kayla, you have to talk like
this. That's what happens when you have estrogen on the show.
Right, exactly. We're not used to it, Gabe. See, we're so out of our element right now. We're so used to just you and me bantering on endlessly.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, I came to throw punches. I am ready.
Exactly. I like it, Kayla. But I think you're right. You know, those shows from the 90s, TGIF, if you watched them now, those are really like guilty pleasures. You know, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, I love that show. I think that's kind of a guilty pleasure.
I'll tell you what the biggest guilty pleasure TV show is, though. Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Oh.
All right. So my wife watches it, and I've kept up with the Kardashians for like a year. I probably kept up with the Kardashians 2 years, you know, while watching it beside her. But I can't say that I want to anymore.
Sling it, so you don't have to worry about it.
Well, how long did you keep up with them?
Yeah, oh, I've seen every season.
Okay, she's been keeping up with them for a long time.
Yeah, sure.
So who are you? Are you more of a Bruce? Are you a Kim? Who are you?
I'm a Chloe for sure.
Oh, you sound like a Chloe. Chloe's kind of spunky, you know. You don't never know what she's gonna do, but she can get sad
she
too.
She doesn't give a crap about what anybody thinks. That's definitely me.
Gabe, you're kind of like a Kanye.
Yeah. You never know what I'm gonna say.
That is true. That's what I was gonna say. I mean, that's what I said.
Well, we're gonna actually credit Kayla with Spider-Man 3 for this episode, as she was telling us that she thought some type of Marvel theme would be good. And I mentioned that I love the first two Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies. And she told me that it was blasphemy not to love Spider-Man 3 and Tobey's finger guns. I believe that was almost her exact quote. Wow. And so it truly morphed into the episode that we're doing tonight. So if you guys are ready, let's hop into Spider-Man 3.
Yeah, I got my finger guns ready, guys.
Okay, so Spider-Man 3 is a 2007 Sony Pictures film directed, as I mentioned earlier, by Sam Raimi. Has a great cast. It's got Tobey Maguire, Kirsten Dunst, James Franco, Thomas Hayden Church, Topher Grace, and Bryce Dallas Howard, who Gabe always refers to as just Bryce Dallas for some reason and leaves the Howard off. It was a massive budget that some estimated to be as high as $350 million. But it also took in $900 million at the box office. And so the basic plot for the movie is Spider-Man goes emo because of an extraterrestrial life form conveniently landing in Central Park right as he's walking by. And this changes him to start tearing the life that he knows down. Plus, there's some villains and some dumb Force Venom subplot. Does that about cover the premise, guys?
It does.
Yeah, I mean, that's writing at its best.
Yeah, I think that was the official synopsis from Sony, too.
It was. I actually just read it from their website.
Yeah, that sounds very familiar.
So, here's what we're going to do. We're gonna walk through the movie. So I'm going to throw out like a handful of scenes to our panel, and then we're just going to open it up and we'll just talk about anything that was going on and happening during these scenes. So I do want to warn everybody that since we're going to do it this way, there's going to be massive spoilers for this movie. So if you haven't seen Spider-Man 3, just don't. You should probably pause the show.
I can't imagine it. Waiting this long to watch it.
Why are you just now watching it?
13 years
watched
later.
Spider-Man 1 and 2 and then just stopped. Congratulations.
You made a good choice.
Oh, that's awesome. So, okay, but I did want to throw that out there just that we are going to spoil the movie. Okay, all right, here we go. All right, so point one here. We got our opening scenes. We've got Peter in class with Gwen Stacy, again played by Bryce Dallas Howard, Gabe. And then we get into the opening night of Mary Jane's new Broadway show. And Harry and Peter are in conflict because Harry thinks Peter killed his dad in cold blood. So we're just 3 or 4 minutes into the movie, and there's already some stuff to talk about. So what do we want to talk about with this opening and the Broadway show and all that?
Well, the first thing that I noticed when I was watching it is, so he's in the classroom, and what is going on with his classmates? Like, they're making fun of him. They're doing all sorts of weird things with, like, mirrors and lights in his face. And I didn't know people still did that. Like, I didn't know that was a thing they did in high school still, or in college, whatever he's in. I mean, Tony McGuire is, like, 40 years old in this movie, so I'm not exactly sure what type of school he's at. Did anybody else notice that?
I did notice it. I think what they were trying to do was like really drive home the point that he is an easygoing, laid back guy because he got in trouble. Like he raised his hand to block the mirror light and the teacher called on him and he was like, "No, sir, I don't have anything to say." And just like kind of that, "Oh, shucks, you know, I got in trouble." But I think it was They're trying to like make a comparison and contrast to how bad he gets as emo Spider-Man later in the movie. That's all I could figure.
Good point, Caleb. But I was thinking more it was their point about making him look like a loser. Maybe not a
maybe. Well, he finally gets some balls later.
Yeah. Immediately after that little scene, like he is talking about, like Tobey Maguire goes on this spin where he's talking about people like me now. He's like, that's my girlfriend. And then she calls him a nerd. It's just,
how is she so jealous of him? I don't understand that part. She's like, you know, she has her big debut. We were talking about she's singing and all this, which she's a terrible singer, by the way. But she has this huge debut and she's so excited about it. And then she sees that he's more popular than she is. And it's like, I'm going to go sit in a corner and cry. It's like, it's Spider-Man.
Yes, he is a superhero. He's literally saving people left and right throughout the city. And you're upset because he's getting more attention than you are. It would be like, you know, me dating one of the Kardashians and me getting mad because I didn't get any of the attention.
Glad we have you on the podcast, because I plan on spending most of this episode talking about how Peter Parker just completely disregards MJ's feelings this whole story.
Well, like, I thought she was being kind of ridiculous, because, I mean, if I were dating Spider-Man, I would be so proud. I'd probably be, like, starstruck, honestly.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be sitting there going, I'm not as popular, you know? That's just weird to me. It's a weird interaction for a relationship. Right.
Kayla, I agree completely. If I was dating Spider-Man, I would just be thankful that I was dating Spider-Man.
I will forever be safe.
I would just be thanking Spider-Man every day. So, I don't know. That's just me, though.
Thank you for dating me. I do wish I could shoot that little web thing that he does, and then they lay in it and make out, him and MJ. I want to be able
You're
to
still
do
in
that.
Thunder, Gabe. You're still in some thunder.
I'm still in thunder. I'm just saying I want to be able to shoot those little web like I don't know, hammocks for me and Rachel to make out in.
Hey, guys, what about James Franco up in that balcony? He's like giving those side eyes.
Oh, I know, like. I was calling him Peeping Tom, James Franco.
Yes. Theme. Yes, he peeps so hard in this movie.
I'll have to say that, literally, I'm watching this movie. It's the first time I've seen it since theaters, because I didn't enjoy it during my first viewing and hadn't felt the need to rewatch it until this episode. But I was like, this will be fun. Let's go into this and see what happens. 3 minutes into the movie, and my camp meter is hitting toxic levels. Like the classroom scene where he's getting picked on and also flirting with Gwen Stacy, I was just like, this is just, it is so campy, like hardcore camp. And then you guys have already brought up Kirsten Dunst, but she's lip syncing it. And T-Man, like you just said, James Franco up there in the balcony peeping Tom. Like, I mean, I'm surprised security wasn't trying to arrest him. I haven't seen a theater scene this bad since the movie Tombstone.
Nice.
It was terrible.
I will say, though, you skipped over the credits. The credits were pretty cool in the beginning because, you know, Marvel always does their little thing at the beginning. And not only did they have, like, the webbing up with, like, the people's pictures and stuff, but they started to actually bring in the symbiote in the credits. So it was kind of taking over the web. And I just thought that was a really nice touch.
That's a good point. And I'm glad that we do have one positive to take
for five. Yeah, Wes, don't be skipping over the good stuff just to get to the bad stuff.
I know. No, there's a whole list of pros here. I'm not letting it go.
Yeah. All right. The credits were good. And the little web hammocks to make out with your wife in are good. Hey, what do you want to do tonight, honey? I was thinking about going to a movie. Nope, web hammock.
It eliminates the whole bugs in your hair when you're stargazing thing. It's great.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a great way to look at it, actually. And Gabe, don't worry, because we're going to move right into that, because after the show, MJ and Peter go to the park, and this is where we get introduced to this black substance that crawls out of the meteorite. So does this damn thing have to fall right next to Spider-Man in New York City? Out of the 7 million people that live in the city. I mean, how convenient is that?
Well, it's trying to get close to Spider-Man. Wouldn't you fall next to him?
What, can it control? I thought came in on a meteor. I mean,
you got some advanced meteorites out there. Advanced alien meteorites.
It had a steering wheel.
So there is a couple of points I do want to make about Spider-Man 3. And I think this is a good time to bring up one of them. So, Wes, you mentioned the symbiote. Is that how you say it?
Symbiote.
All right. There you go. Yeah. So I'm just going to call it the black substance. The black substance. Right. Exactly. So I don't know how familiar the audience is with Spider-Man, you know, comic books, but Venom was a very popular character in the 90s, I believe. Yes. Big fan favorite. Well, Sam Raimi, the director, of course, Drake did 1 and 2, which I consider two of the best comic book movies, especially number 2. And basically, from what I've read, the Venom character was forced upon Sam Raimi. Like, he did not want Venom in the movie. And I think that's where a lot of the issues come with this film. It's Sam Raimi being forced this character because it's just another bad guy where they already have too many. And you can tell he despises the Venom character, just what he does with it. Like, every choice he makes is the wrong choice with Venom. And Sam Raimi's doing it on purpose. Like, I truly believe that. Like, he's not trying to make the Venom character good or entertaining. He's doing it to basically piss off Sony and say, okay, you forced this character upon me, I'm going to make it awful.
Well, I think it's kind of been a running thing for the Venom character in general, because if you look at the one with Tom Hardy, it's not good either.
Yeah, the Venom character is just awful in general. So
Sony,
I think,
just needs to let it go.
Kayla, to your point, Sam Raimi was right. Sam Raimi said, and he actually came out last year, I believe. He actually had a, you know, some reporters asked him this, or I think he was like in a, they kind of had a retrospective of the film. And he said basically that the lesson he learned with this character and really with Spider-Man 3 was that he doesn't need to have a character in there that he didn't believe in. And that was kind of, and he's basically alluding to Venom. Like, you can tell he does not like this character. The whole film leads up. I mean, the Venom character really doesn't show up till the very end, really.
Well, I mean, except when he's making Peter Parker, emo Peter Parker.
Right. But that's like Sam Raimi saying, you know what? That's not really the character, though. That's like him saying, I don't like this character. I'm just going to do something really weird with it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost insulting. But like, he does, the thing about Venom in this movie is he doesn't even explain who he is. Like, when I was watching this movie, like, he just pops into it. You don't even really know what the thing that Kayla said was, the gobbledygook was. and you just all of a sudden out of nowhere, it turns him emo. So you don't even know what's going on.
Right. I mean, because Sam Raimi, and that's kind of to the point I'm making, is that Sam Raimi despises Venom the character. So he basically just said, all right, I'm just going to make it truly awful and not make it good at all, just to show Sony that they should never made him put it in there.
And then Sony, on the other hand, from their perspective, was that Sam Raimi, he was going through and just picking out his favorite villains, just the ones that he liked, and putting them in the movie, although they were not always the most popular of the villains. But as we saw with Spider-Man 3 and then Amazing Spider-Man and Amazing Spider-Man 2, when Sony was choosing who got to go in there, it wasn't working.
No. Not at all. Those three, I mean, those next two Spider-Mans are worse than this one, I think. I mean, I think Spider-Man 3 is better than the next two. Like, they are truly, Kayla, they're bottom of the barrel bad.
Like, Spider-Man 3 is better.
Yeah, sure, it really is.
That's another pro on your list.
Really important, before we move on, we know Sam Raimi listens, so we've just defended you for a little bit. But Sony, if you're also listening, we agree with you too.
No, but no, I think
if you're
the lesson,
listening, can they just let Spider-Man go, please?
they make so many of them. But I think the point is, I think a lesson learned is, when you've got a filmmaker as great as Sam Raimi, and he's already made two of the best comic book movies, maybe just let him do what he thinks is best instead of forcing him upon studio notes.
So the next thing is, in the movie timeline, we get an introduction to Sandman, who is Flint Marco, an escaped convict, and Peter tells Aunt May that he's going to propose to Mary Jane. So any thoughts about our introduction here to Flint Marco and Peter's plan?
That proposal story, I mean, you didn't give me a lot to go on there, Wes, but I'll say that proposal story is awful. What I learned is that Peter's aunt didn't want to marry his uncle, and then later on he blinded her with a ring and she said yes. It was a really sucky story. Don't tell your kid that story.
I didn't think it was very good either. And I really didn't even have a note for this particular set of scenes here, but it also was kind of integral to the story.
The only things that I had was that it's always bothered me Aunt May was entirely too old for this scene. Well, for these movies, because with him being in college, she should have been much younger. And so that has always bothered me. I don't know why they made her. I mean, she looks like a crypt keeper in this one.
maybe she's a great Aunt May.
Remember, Toby is literally like 40 years old in this movie. So
that's true.
Really, no, he's supposed to be 20.
I know he's supposed to be, but what is Toby still doing in college? That's what I want to know. He's literally like a freshman in college in this movie still.
I know. It was bizarre. He shouldn't have been in school at all. You know, one thing I did want to point out about these movies, these three Spider-Man movies in particular, this was all before the MCU kind of kicked off, you know, with the Iron Man films and everything that it's become. And I noticed a stark difference in these three compared to the newer ones was they really work on developing those interpersonal relationships. I mean, we have like in the newer ones, we have the relationships between the Avengers, but we don't really see much between the Avengers and like their families or the people that they care about outside of the people they work with. But this one, I mean, we had, you know, MJ and Harry's relationship, Peter and MJ's relationship, Peter and Harry, and then Aunt May. And there's so many intricate relationships that are kind of going into this. And then they bring in Gwen Stacy. And I thought it was really interesting because usually these kind of movies just focus on the action and the villains, but they were really driving home that Peter cared about all of these different people in his life.
I mean, they're kind of like Batman movies.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Right. Much, much more like Batman than it was some the other Marvel, the, you know, what Marvel ultimately became.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. I think Spider-Man 2 does a fantastic job of all the relationships, and maybe better than any other movie because you care about the characters so much in Spider-Man 2. Now, this one, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I did not review the first two, so I cannot remember and compare, but I just compared to the rest of the MCU. I noticed that was a big difference.
Kale, no, I think that's a great point.
I think you're 100% right, and that's kind of another point I had written down was that, you know, the MCU movies, I really enjoy them, and they're you know, very well made.
Yes.
But they're kind of like a corporate monolith. Like they're very,
yes.
You can sense it in the movie. This is not like that at all. This is Sam Raimi's unique, crazy vision. And I will defend it in this way. You know, the MCU movies, even though they are very entertaining, you can sense it when you're watching it. That is very, the corporate mandate and the studio notes mm-hmm. are all within it. And in this one, even though it does have that studio interference, it still shines through that Sam Raimi's in charge. And I kind of rewatching it, I really noticed how different it is than those MCU movies, like you said, Kayla.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, I mean, let's fast forward all the way to Endgame. I mean, we finally start getting to see like Tony Stark and his relationship with his daughter and Pepper. And we, of course, see the relationship with Captain America and Agent Carter. But you don't really mourn those relationships as much as you do like Tony Stark and Spider-Man's, you know, when Spider-Man poofs. And everything, you feel Tony's pain, whereas in these original Spider-Man movies, you feel the pain when he's losing MJ to Harry, and you feel the pain when he loses Uncle Ben. And I think they did a really good job at developing those relationships.
Yeah,
I think Spider-Man 2 did it good, and I think Captain America Winter Soldier did it good.
Yeah.
But then the rest of them are just kind of for me.
I think one of the problems with the MCU is that they're so focused on the next movie, the next connecting all the, bringing all the different characters, even the new Spider-Mans. But like, I enjoyed those, but they've got to ram in Tony and John Favreau's in there. And then all the other MCU characters, where this one, like you all said,
right.
It feels like more of just like an actual just movie.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Endgame, I sobbed in the theater, but it was for a different reason than I would have with the first three with Spider-Man. I just feel like I connect more with those characters individually because the other ones are just like a, it's like a, I can't think of the word, corporate, you know, you said the corporation thing. It's kind of like that. It just feels like a business thing. Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, going from corporate monoliths, I do want to say I hate when you turn into sand. You know, I hate when you're like, you fall in one of those like things with like the probes running around you, just running from police, bam, turned into sand.
Yeah, where is that thing at? What is that thing?
Oh,
what
it must the be a bird. Of the machine? Let's not check it out before we turn this on.
Let's not check for it.
Bird, let's turn it on. We got to get to lunch.
It was the middle of the night. They had nothing to do.
They get lunch break too, though. Yeah, it's just a different kind of lunch break.
We have this sand creating machine. We got to turn it on before 2:14 p.m.
Wow.
Yeah. So we skipping ahead just a little. So the next thing after, you know, the Aunt May proposal story and we get introduced to Sandman, we get our first fight scene between Harry as the new Goblin and Spider-Man. And Spider-Man eventually wins this, surprisingly, and then knocks the new Goblin unconscious. And Peter, being such a nice guy, takes him to the hospital. Plus, simultaneously, we do get the Sandman creation scene. So what do you guys want to talk about with this handful of scenes?
Well, I would just say that the action scene is really good. Still holds up, I think. I mean, it's excellent. And I remembered it from the theater, and rewatching it, I was like, wow, that plays really well still.
The CGI for that time was actually really decent. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that in that scene with the creation of Sandman, but also with him, Harry and Peter fighting while flying and all of that. They did a lot of CGI with those, and it was really good.
Yeah, my note I put down here is that the first fight scene is solid. Like, it was really good. I said the only thing that was a little strange with those alleyways were like 10 miles long. They just kept going.
Love long alleyways.
That's New York for you, though. I mean, you can literally just walk for miles in one line.
Now, I do have a question. In this new age of comic book movies, who the hell is paying for all of this damage that literally every superhero causes? Like, every encounter they have, there is just this constant mass destruction and damage. I mean, the taxpayers in these cities, it's like, well, thanks, guys. I mean, I guess you saved the city, but my taxes are now 70% of my income.
You truly destroyed the city. I have nowhere to live, but thank you.
I don't know how they can afford to live in New York as is. I mean,
I think there would be a revolt, like Uncle Sam's accounting firm that just got destroyed and now is never going to recover from it would just like hate superheroes, and then they would eventually overthrow them.
Well, you know, Wes, you make a good point, because the MCU, actually going back to MCU, they actually do a kind of a good job with this. Like, after the first Avengers movie, they do address this type of stuff, even in the first Spider-Man Homecoming. Michael Keaton's character Vulture is screwed over by Tony's firm, and he has to go into vulturing, I guess you could say. So those movies kind of do address that in a way.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Tony Stark was somewhere across the city paying for everything, because we don't know who he is at that time, but I think it mostly fell back on him.
And another point about that is Man of Steel, at the end of that, where they literally destroy the entire city and hundreds of thousands of people died, that was a huge, that was a pretty big talking point in controversy, and that led directly to Superman versus Batman. That was Batman's arc. So I think they have tried to address that, Wes, but you make a great point about that.
I was going to say, in Superman, I think they've literally destroyed like millions of buildings. Like, that one's the worst.
Well, and
it's like a Roland Emmerich movie at all times.
I noticed there was a part later on in Spider-Man 3 when he's the Black Spider-Man, because he wasn't necessarily Venom, but when he is just kind of fighting and destroying things, there's almost this moment where he pauses and kind of looks around at all the destruction he's caused, because I don't think that was his normal thing. He didn't kill people, and he tried not to cause much damage. And you can just kind of see on his face, like, what have I done? So I think that they were kind of bringing that in more toward the end of the movie to kind of, you know, draw more attention to the fact that this Black symbiote is very destructive.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of symbiotes, in this movie, there's there's sad sand, there's angry sand, and then we just realized he's misunderstood sand.
Misunderstood. He has always done a great job of, like, humanizing those villains. Because, I mean, I actually felt for Thanos in Endgame, which was bizarre, but I think the Sandman guy, for sure. I mean, you just sympathize with the fact that he was trying to help his daughter.
I think you was say you sympathize with a genocidal mass murderer.
we'll just wipe that out.
Well, when you put it that way.
No, I see what you're saying, though. They do a great job with maybe not sympathizing, but giving them shades of gray, which always makes the best villains.
I mean, nobody is fully chaotic evil. I mean, not really in real life. I mean, maybe if you're a psychopath, I don't know. But everybody has like a purpose behind what they're doing, whether it's right or wrong.
Yep. And the worst villains actually in MCU was really, I don't know, we keep talking about that, or maybe it's just me, that they were really, a lot of people were bad on them because they said, you don't have interesting villains other than Loki, but then they came with Thanos, who had that gray side to him and kind of the sympathetic arc, so I think that's a good point.
Absolutely.
So who do you think Sam Raimi wanted to go with in this movie? You think he wanted to go Sandman? Because I think Sandman could be a good character. Great character, bad CGI.
That's where they screwed up. You can tell that Sandman does not have enough story to him. He needs more. Yeah.
Well, while you guys are making all these good points, I did want to point out that James Franco's acting repertoire does not include hospital patient. Because I don't know what on earth that he was doing with that stone cheese dick grin he had going on that whole time. What is this scene?
I think it was he was supposed to be like relieved of all the burden that his father had put on him to get revenge, you know, because he had amnesia. So he was just like, hi, I'm so happy to be like completely laid out in a hospital bed.
This is your token, convenient short-term memory loss scene just for the purpose of the film. The writers had to find a quick way to make them friends again. Bam.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
lose his memory for? Oh, just the last exact amount of time he's been the bad guy? Okay, perfect.
Well, it was almost like they're writing the script and they're like, all right, we've got the Green Goblin here. James Franco's gonna turn into him. They had the big fight and they're like, oh crap, we still got like 2 hours left in the movie. Let's give him a concussion. He'll come back, surely, you know. But yeah, Wes, to your point, and actually you make a point that I want to make a broader point of, not just what James Franco's doing in that bed scene, what is he doing in the entire movie?
He's just like, he doesn't fit the character at all for some reason. And then the whole thing with him and MJ, it's like he was gunning for MJ, but he didn't even know why he was gunning for MJ because of the convenient amnesia.
Yes. Yeah, it's a truly ridiculous character in this movie, and it's just a truly ridiculous acting performance.
I've never thought that James was the greatest actor in the world, but I mean, like in Spring Breakers, I thought he did a good job with his character, and he's played good characters, 127 hours. You know, there's other times he's been pretty good and shows that he's got a little bit of range, but this may be his worst acting performance that I've seen in him, because he was really bad in this movie.
Well, and the character that they set him up to become, which is the new Green Goblin, is such a dead-end character anyway, because, spoiler alert, he dies at the end of this movie, and it's like they're just really pushing for this revenge thing, but then why? Why does he need to get revenge? I mean, he's going to end up turning good and then die. Like, it just made no sense. It was the most pointless character.
I like how Kayla just hops on here and just throws out our first spoiler, like, bam!
Sorry, man, you can edit it out.
That's okay.
We're leaving it in. We already told people we were going to spoil the crap out of this movie anyway.
No, it's usually me. I was complimenting you. Trust me.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, we were talking about character arcs and everything, and his just was so pointless.
Yeah, it's really bad. And it goes to the point, I know we've said this over and over again, but it just goes to the point of them cramming too many bad guys into it. And it ends up watering down all of their character arcs. None of them have a good one.
Guys, you guys are dead wrong. How are they going to have this ultimate tag team wrestling match between two good guys and two bad guys at the end if we don't have two good guys and two bad guys?
Yeah, that was awesome.
You're right.
You did need the WWE storyline. So we're now back at Peter's apartment, and MJ tells Peter about the negative reviews, you know, looking for some empathy, maybe sympathy. And Peter then gets a report of I can barely even say it without laughing, gets a report of an out of control crane, and he swings off.
Damn, I hate those out of control cranes.
Out of control cranes. And then we see the black substance in Peter's apartment. So then Spider-Man goes to battle the out-of-control crane and saves Gwen Stacy. So what did you guys think about this scene?
Well, by this point in the movie, I'm already lost in the plot. I have no idea what's going on. This crane now is in here. You got these models up there. Like, who are these people? What is happening in this movie? I don't know.
How is Bryce Dallas, whatever her last name, or Dallas Bryce, or whatever her name is, on in this building where the crane's going to hit? Is she just everywhere?
Where her dad didn't even know she was modeling, which is the funniest part. And in the comics, MJ is the model, not Gwen Stacy. She's a reporter. So it was all over the place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point you make, because her dad just shows up, like, literally as soon as the crane hits. He's like the chief of police.
Yeah, and he has his daughter hanging out of a building.
I mean, everything's happening so conveniently. I mean, even we didn't mention it, but during the Sandman creation scene, that it all just kind of happens just so conveniently. Like, he just walks like right into it as it's happening. And it just keeps cracking me up. But I'm sitting watching this movie by myself. This crazy crane scene is going on, and I'm laughing to myself on out loud, cracking up. I just couldn't believe that they settled on out of control crane to get Spider-Man to swing off. You know, it's like when cranes go wild. And I love that operator that he's just sitting there. He's just hitting the on and off switch just over and over and over, but it won't turn off. It just keeps swinging around. You know, some crane designer is going to have his pants suit off.
Well, did anybody notice when Gwen is already hanging out of the building, like the crane has sort of fallen and it's swung and like wiped out an entire floor of the building, and then somehow it goes upwards? How does it just levitate up and just slice right up through the building and knock Gwen Stacy off? It did not make, like, physics does not operate that way.
Hey, it's just a wild crane. Physics don't apply to wild cranes.
This is not the case of a bad guy. This is just a really shoddy crane operator. He's just trying to fix it after he's already messed up.
Well, I was just, it was falling through the air 5 seconds before that, and then suddenly it's going upwards. I'm like, what is propelling it upward? It was only to serve to knock Gwen Stacy off the building so that Spider-Man could save her.
Spider-Man movies have never been good with physics, I don't think.
No.
I will say that scene's really terrible, and I laughed a lot at it too, Wes, but it is cool CGI. But then the scene where Spider-Man does save Bryce Dallas, whatever Howard. Her name is, Howard, through
just call
the rubble.
Gwen, Gabe.
Okay, when Spider-Man saves Gwen through the rubble, it's a spectacular scene. He has to grab a piece and duck under one and gets right before the ground. That is a cool scene, and it held up.
The scene is really badly plotted, because you can tell it's the screenwriter just being like, we don't know what to do. Let's just put this crane scene in there. But once again, Sam Raimi, great director, and it's really well done, like really well directed, great CGI still.
So what you're saying is, if you're going to settle on a ridiculous subplot like the out of control crane, pulled it off.
Sam
directing it.
Sam can do it.
Well, we also get introduced to Eddie Brock here, played by Topher Grace, and Eddie Brock is going to be Peter Parker's photographer rival at the Daily Bugle.
I need to pause here while you introduce him. I have to. I know you're getting ready to talk, Wes, but was Topher Grace's hair in this movie real? Did anybody have that haircut back then? Hold on.
He's always had that haircut.
Hold on. I know somebody that had that haircut with the yellow tips and all. Wes Jones, our lead host. Look at his little picture on his Skype there.
I don't remember that.
You had the spiky hair.
Oh, cut. Take. All right. Take two. We'll have to edit that out.
I do remember that hair. I do remember that hair now, Gabe. Yes. I was having flashbacks. I couldn't picture whose the face was.
Wes,
it was Wes. Yes. It all makes sense now.
Well, about Topher Grace, besides that his hair was really cool, he's going to play that 70s Venom. And is this not the biggest miscast in maybe film history?
Just truly awful. Just one of the worst performances, one of the worst casting jobs. Once again, it's Sam Raimi saying, oh, you want Venom? I'll cast this Joker and F you to the studio.
As Eddie Brock, he was okay, but I didn't really get the whole ballsy vibe that he was really pushing, because he was like, I'm the better photographer. I'm going to catch Spider-Man in a bad light. But then when he gets to Venom, it's really bad.
On Kayla's team here. I think he was good as the Eddie Brock, but not good as Venom. He was not as good as Venom. But I did love his hair.
Well, I did too. I did too. I don't know why, but I did enjoy it. But I will say for Kayla's pro list is that, man, I love J.K. Simmons.
Yes,
he is awesome here.
Yeah. Just so good, so good. That scene where Eddie Brock and Tobey Maguire are in there for the first time. It's so funny. Like, I love it.
Oh, something in there did make me laugh, like, out loud. What about that crazy buzzer system that they had in there?
We need that.
Where he, like, throws his pills everywhere?
Yeah, he's like, your pills. The other
ball. Oh, you guys, you forgot to include in your casting. That was actually Elizabeth Banks.
His
secretary was Elizabeth Banks.
Yeah, you're right, Kayla. And the guy that was putting the words on the blackboard, whatever you call it, is Ted Raimi. So Sam Raimi's brother, and that was funny too.
Oh, wow.
I did not know that.
Yeah. He's always in Sam Raimi's movie. He's kind of like, he needs a job, you know. He's kind of like Clint Howard movies. Gabe, you would know that if you knew who Dallas Howard was. It's his daughter. But anyway.
That buzzer system would not exist. They would uninstall it after one day of it going off like that. That's it.
Well, the best part is I think those pills were for his blood pressure.
Yeah, that was pretty clever. All right, so we find out that Mary Jane is going to be replaced or fired after the bad reviews that she got. Unsurprising bad reviews, by the way. But we've got Spider-Man having some type of parade or ceremony where Spider-Man inexplicably kisses Gwen Stacy in front of the world for them to see. MJ, on the other hand, is confiding in Harry, and we see, I guess you could call those sparks here. And then we get to the first fight scene between Sandman and Spider-Man. So several big things going off here, and I'll just start by saying it seems like Peter and MJ's relationship is hitting on all cylinders.
Before we dive into that, I do want to say there's a little scene that we missed. There's a Stan Lee cameo right before that.
Yes.
And he really saves the movie for me. There is a quote, and I love the quote. He goes, I guess one man really can make a difference looking at Spider-Man. And, well, Stan Lee, you did. With all yes. your comics. So I wanted to say that here, but go into what you were going to say, Wes.
Oh, no, that was it. It's your guys' turn. What do we think about all this Spider-Man ceremony? And we get the whole relationship with Gwen Stacy and Peter Parker taking a step further with the kiss. And we got MJ and Harry.
I got to say, like, Spider-Man makes a horrible move by just welcoming Gwen Stacy to kiss him in front of MJ. And he can't even blame that on Venom because he wasn't wearing it at the time. Like, he was just a total doofus. Who would do that?
I mean, he doesn't care about her feelings.
No.
I told you we're going to talk about that today.
That's why you've got me on here now.
He just doesn't care.
No, I don't think is Spider-Man getting to his head? Is that what they're going for there? That the popularity is getting to him?
Yeah, he's a little too big for his britches, I think.
Yeah. Well, it certainly made no Spidey sense at all for him to do that.
Nice play on words.
What is he doing during this? He's doing that Spider-Man parade march. He keeps saying, they love me.
It was a response to him saving Gwen, because she was the police chief's daughter. So she was like kind of the mayor of the city, I guess.
Yeah, but what city organizes a speech, a band? Where do they get these people?
Remember, he's like Shazam. He's saying all sorts of weird things.
Oh, he does say Shazam.
I love it. So let me jump in here real quick with this thing, because there's a few things I do want to say about Spider-Man 3 again overall. So I do think rewatching the movie, it really stands out how much of a comic book the movie is. Like, I think this movie does one of the best jobs of actually making it feel like a comic book. Like, it may not be the best movie. I don't really think it is. But is it one of the most like a comic book? I kind of think it is. Just the boldness of the colors, the characters, the character arcs, all the different subplots is just like a comic book.
So here's another thing I thought about when I was rewatching it. So around this time in 2008, so Christopher Nolan Batman films were getting really popular. And so what did all the critics kept saying about those Batman films? That it was basically a comic book. They took a comic book into the real world. You know, basically, you know, The Dark Knight was like Heat, a crime drama. Well, I think Spider-Man 3 in particular is where Sam Raimi took people, like characters, into a comic book world. Like he flipped it, because all the characters are like kind of real characters, but this world is such a comic book world. So I think it's like the opposite of the Dark Knight movies. And I think that's why it feels so weird sometimes rewatching it. So what do y'all think about that?
That's an excellent point.
Yeah, I like that point a lot. But like we've already talked about on this podcast before, I made the argument that I felt like the most comic book movie of all time is Dick Tracy.
Yeah, but that's what, and I agree with you, but that one is almost like a print by print combo. It's almost like Warren Beatty was like side by side, where Sam Raimi's doing something a little bit different. He's like making it feel like a comic book. It's a little bit different that he's doing it. Like it's not as obvious, I guess you could say.
He's doing it subtly, whereas Dick Tracy does it blatantly obvious.
Yeah, Dick Tracy is like right in your face. You know right away that's a comic. This one, it takes you a little while to realize what Sam Raimi's doing. And I think once again, that's why it feels so weird when you're rewatching it.
Yeah.
Well, another thing that makes me feel weird is whenever James Franco goes bop on the head scene with Kirsten Dunst. That's a little mind numbing. I can't figure out again
that
what this
so is. That was awkward.
If some guy did that to you, would just, you know, a few scenes later, would you kiss him after he did a bop on your head?
Heck no. I mean, it was just like the joke too. I mean, it just goes right back to that cheesy grin he had in the hospital. I mean, she was just like, can you just bop me on the head? And then he has the audacity to actually go bop. it's just another thing about why his character is so pointless.
Hey Wes, why don't you ask me, because if a guy did that to me, yes, I would.
that is completely how I got Rachel. She was like, I was like, hey, how's it going? Bop.
It's a great pickup. I wonder how many guys tried that after that scene.
Oh, I hope zero. So another thing that I thought was, and Team, and you actually already brought this up. You were talking about how he's saying words like Shazam and all this type of stuff. But what about some of the, like, whenever Spider-Man, he meets, I guess, Sandman for the first time in this movie, and he says, I'm the sheriff in these parts. Does that not literally sound like something Sheriff Woody from Toy Story would have said?
100%. I thought that same thing last. This movie has such like a 1950s gee whiz like feel to it. It's so amusing to me, like so campy in that way.
Yep.
He says like right after that, he goes, where do all these bad guys keep coming from?
All right. So next we find out that Flint Marko, Sandman, is in fact the one that's responsible for Uncle Ben's death. We've got Peter and MJ's relationship further declining. The black substance in Peter's apartment latches onto him, and he's transformed into a dark, all-black Superman suit. He then smashes Brock's camera, gets in another fight with Sandman, and seems to have taken Sandman out by drowning him. So is there anything in this handful of scenes that stands out to you?
I do like how they tied in that the Sandman was Uncle Ben's killer, but it's so annoying to me that they rehash his death in every single movie.
Okay, awful. You said that that's good. I think it's awful. So let me tell you why I think it's awful. Because let me get this straight. The police department hid the real murderer from you for 2 years. They just didn't let you know that it wasn't this guy that murdered your uncle. It was actually this guy, this random guy over here. That just sounds like lazy screenwriting.
I think they were trying to redeem the movie by like making a tie-in, so it's all kind of like tied up with a bow, but just failing everywhere.
I'm with you, Gabe. I think it's just like revisionist screenwriting. It's so lazy. I don't understand.
How can we make him hate this man? It wasn't actually this guy. It was this the other guy that we've never heard of.
Like that was, and that was a big like plot point in the first one, and they totally just like totally changed it. It was so dumb. I don't know why they did that. It does not work, I don't think.
Sorry, but he did it for a good reason.
The next night, we got Peter who meets MJ at a fancy restaurant to propose, and she rejects him. There you go, T-Man. Bruce Campbell on deck. Yeah.
Man, Bruce Campbell, love him. Love these cameos. You know, he's in all three of them as different little characters, and those scenes are always so funny. So for, you know, film nerds out there, you know, Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell were best friends growing up, and they both got into the film industry, and Bruce Campbell is, you know, a huge B movie icon, and he's, you know, I just love his little cameos in these films.
Oh, I do too. And for me, I thought this was the best scene in the whole movie, this whole restaurant scene, like all of it. I thought from both the writing and acting, the combination of like serious, you know, the serious dialogue that MJ and Peter are having, and then you've got the humor going on in the background. Like I did. I enjoyed this scene. I thought it was the best. And T-Man, I'm also a big Bruce Campbell fan, so I enjoy him in all these movies.
Once again, this whole scene is just shrouded by the fact that Peter doesn't know how to pay attention to MJ's feelings. He hasn't even asked her about her. He just tells her, he tries to fix it. You know, everybody, the girls don't want you to go in and fix it. In fact, you know, we should just go ahead and change this podcast to an MJ's feelings podcast. Just, Kayla, in case you don't know this, most of me and Tommy's time on the podcast is spent coming up with these spectacular spinoff podcast ideas, and most of Wes's time is spent rejecting us because we're kind of visionaries. We've come up with Shark Top Talk, a shark talk. Podcast, Underground Layer podcast, emo podcast.
I like this one, Gabe. I like where you're going with this. MJ Emotional Talk, is that what we're calling it? Something
MJ's
like that.
MJ's Emotional Talk podcast. Kayla, would you like to come on?
I think I'll pass.
She's like, no, get me off of here.
He's not my favorite character.
All right, cue the music, Wes.
I'm just saying, like, you want to talk about MJ's feelings. I mean, he is the most disconnected boyfriend on the planet. He's so focused on his life as Spider-Man, he can't even be there and be empathetic for her and know what's going on in her life. Harry knows more about what's going on in her life because he takes the time to talk to her for 5 minutes. So I can completely agree that she deserves better.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Kayla, I know you didn't want to be on the podcast that they just talked about, but we're actually going to take that clip that you just recorded and we're going to edit it in on their show. So,
one girl on our podcast.
That's the hard hitting information you're going to get at MJ's emotional podcast.
Great guest that we tricked to coming on the show.
Can we? Okay, so I don't know if y'all are done with that, but I just cannot stop thinking about the fact that Peter Parker, Spider-Man, thought that getting Sandman wet was going to kill him because sand totally disintegrates and doesn't exist anymore once it's hit by water.
Well, Kayla, that's a great point because that's where they screw up this character. Is like, you don't even really know what the character is, like how to kill him, what hurt, like it's just so abstract. They don't do a good job with that. But I will say the fight sequence with him in the subway, I think, is the best fight in the movie. Like, it's really well done.
Yeah, it was really good.
That's why Toby's still in school. He's learning how to get rid of sand. That's why I said it.
What about that shot where he's down there in the subway and it's right before what you're talking about, Kayla, where he gets the water on him, but like Sam Raimi pulls the Sam Raimi camera stuff out and like he's zooming in and the screws are popping out. Like,
yes, that,
I love that sequence.
Yeah, that was good. Very good. So the next night, or I guess maybe it was later that night, but Mary Jane and Harry, they hang out again, and all of a sudden, Harry has this sudden flashback of Spider-Man killing his dad, which ultimately is going to turn him back into the new Goblin. MJ then ends things with Peter, who it was kind of Harry's idea to do it this way, or Goblin's idea to do it this way. Blackmailed her, yep. And then Peter then meets Harry at dinner where he claims he's MJ's new man and they have a quick fight. So anything through here?
Okay, first we have to address how awkward and cringy the cooking scene is between Harry and MJ.
I was getting ready to say, how did you skip over James Franco and Mary Jane making omelets in the montage?
Well, I said they hung out.
Who tries to flip an omelet like that?
You guys are supposed to fill in the color commentary. I said they hung out.
Yeah, games get.
I mean, that's
it's like we went from bop on the head to worse.
Yeah,
I don't know what the sequence is. Once again, I think it's Sam Raimi just saying screw you to Sony and just putting in some really weird stuff.
There is so many things about the omelet sequence. He yells at his butler, hey, I got a guest coming over. Get us some food. And the butler replies like, he goes, meh. Like, he doesn't, like, even say a word. And then he said, get us some food, you know. And so then he's like, scurries off. And next thing you know, they're making omelets with, like, peppers. And then she comes over and he's like, you hungry? And then they make omelets. Like, I would be insulted if I was a girl. What, I've got to make omelets at 5 o'clock in the afternoon? Like, no.
It's weird that he tells the butler to cook and then suddenly they're cooking.
Yeah.
It's all a little convoluted.
And is that butler? Is that Alfred from Batman?
I was thinking the same thing.
Like, where did that guy come from?
Again, you were talking about the Batman movies. I think they were trying to, like, create a parallel, you know?
It's so weird. That scene is so badly done. They're dancing to, like, music. It's like, what?
It was so bad.
What is happening right now? They spent $350 million on this? What is Sony talking about? Man.
This was the most expensive scene in the movie.
Our stock market, our stock price is going to plunge.
So now we get to into the best or worst, however you look at it. We get evil emo Spider-Man.
That was the redeeming grace of the whole movie, okay?
Yes. We've got him strutting down the street. We've got him embarrassing Eddie Brock at the Daily Bugle. We've got him taking Gwen Stacy out on a date at the jazz club. So I know everybody's been waiting to talk about this stuff, so go at it.
Just truly iconic. I'm just going to say that first. Kayla, what are your thoughts on it?
Well, it's so iconic that Spider-Man and the multiverse, Into the Multiverse or Spider-Verse, whatever that one was, they even reference it as part of his bad period. I mean, it went down in history. Like, I don't think any other scene from a Marvel movie has gone down in history. Nobody even remembers the rest of the plot. I never remember the rest of the plot. All I remember is the finger guns, the pelvic thrusting.
All the pelvic thrusting, yes.
The bangs toss where he, like, tosses his head to get those emo bangs out of his eyes. I mean, it was my favorite.
Don't forget the air humps.
Yes.
It's so amazing. And all the lines he says, like, what does he say? He's like, you're trash, Brock.
No. He goes, you want forgiveness? Get religion.
Yes. He said, I'm going to put some dirt in your eye.
Yes!
Like, what? Who says this stuff? What is happening in this sequence? I don't know. Was Sam Raimi on drugs? I think there's 100% chance he was.
Well, then in the whole scene where he goes to try and make MJ jealous, I wouldn't have been jealous. I would have been like, oh, thank God I escaped that.
Yes. Like, what is he doing? Like, what is that dance he's doing? Why does everybody clear out? That's what I want to know. If I saw that in a club, I'd be like, what is happening here? It's like, people would be booing him.
Yeah, the finger snapping where he's like, now we'll dance.
Yes. And he's like, now dig this. Or he's like, now dig on this.
Yes. Now dig this. That's what it was.
I'm being serious. Like, I remember him walking down the street and flipping his bangs and the finger gun. I remember all of that from when I saw. I could not believe that I did not remember this jazz club scene. So I'm sitting there on the couch. I'm watching this, and my face starts to get red, and I start getting, like, hot because I was so embarrassed for the movie at this point.
Yes.
Let me ask y'all this in a real question, because, you know, we've talked about Sam Raimi. Sam Raimi's a great director, like, really good. What do you think? What were they going for here? Why do you think this is in the movie? I really think it's because Sam Raimi was like, I'm just going to screw this movie up. What do you all think? Do y'all have a theory?
I'm going to tell you this. When I sat down to watch this movie, it was yesterday. Because I put off watching this movie until the absolute last minute. And I was really struggling at, like, an hour and 15 minutes in. I was like, man, I don't know if I'm going to make it. I was like, I don't know if I can do the rest of this. It was 9 o'clock. And I was, but this scene saved it, T-Man. You could argue that he was, if it wasn't for me knowing that this scene was coming, I would have turned it off. So
it's so bad, it's good.
Yeah, you say ruins this movie. We was trying to screw it up. I think he was trying to save it. He's like, how can I save this movie in 3 minutes?
Sam knew he had a clunker, so he was like, I got to do something. Bruce Campbell and him and Tim Raimi, they got in a room. They came up with this sequence. It's possible.
He's like, how can I save this movie in 3 minutes? We'll have Toby saying things like, find us some shade, hot legs.
And what is going on
with the finger guns? Like the look, the ladies are like actually looking and smiling. Like if I walk down the street or at the mall doing finger guns, people be like, "Wrong with you?"
No. Remember, in the first, they're like disgusted. Remember, they're showing him. He thinks they're smiling, but when you really see him, they're kind of like, "Ugh, what?"
As a woman, if someone tipped me, I don't care how much they tip me, if they call me hot legs, I'm spitting in their food.
Find us some shade, hot legs.
If somebody...
I reiterate, if I were MJ, I would have been so relieved that I had dumped him.
Yeah, it's so crazy. What is he going for there? Like, he's obviously trying to make MJ jealous, but like you said, Kayla... I don't think he's accomplishing that. I think he's just driving home the point of how much a loser he is.
Well, and then he like abuses her at the end, knocks her down.
Oh yeah, yeah. We don't even want to talk about that. After all the emotional
about the domestic violence.
Yeah, let's just go into the physical abuse, Spidey.
Yep, mental, emotional abuse, and then just slap her across the face. That's great.
Wow, Spider-Man is a real jerk in this movie.
No, this is a great cutscene for. Our Emotions of MJ podcast. This is right. We're going to tackle this topic with Kayla, right?
Sure.
Okay, sometime.
She's agreed now.
Oh, good.
I think it's interesting. I had written this down, and it may not resonate with anybody, but the symbiote that has attached to him that makes him Venom and all that stuff, I feel like it's something that we can almost relate to if you think about it, because everybody has those moments where you get, like, the attractive temptation to... It feels good to be bad. You know, you just want something different. You want something out of the norm. And it's especially attractive to do when you're having a hard time in life. And that's what they were going through. They were going through a hard time. So I actually kind of related to Spider-Man in this scene, even though I don't approve. It's easy to get carried away when you're finally feeling good after a long time of feeling bad, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point. And honestly,
so don't normalize it, though, please.
I'm not trying to normalize it. I'm just saying I relate.
Yeah, and honestly, Kayla, you make a great point about the symbiote. I don't know if I'm saying that right still.
I feel good about it.
But I think they do a decent job of kind of showing the mirror image of Venom and what it's doing to Peter Parker, because you know Venom the character is supposed to be evil, but Sam Raimi changes it where he just gets like Peter Parker cannot be evil, so they make him like kind of just obnoxious. Like that
couldn't be a heavy metal guy. He couldn't be like a biker dude. That's scary. He had to go emo.
A biker dude? That's what you think is evil, Gabe?
Well, he's too nerdy. He's too nerdy to actually be cool.
Yeah, I think they're scarier. Like maybe
you say a metal heavy dude, like a metal guy, like somebody that listens to metal. That's who's evil.
Yeah, no, I mean not evil, fans, maybe scary.
And everybody that owns a Harley.
Yeah,
come back, guys. I think you guys are cool, just like Sony.
yeah, I think I don't know. So I thought that was interesting. I think that's going along with what you're saying, Kayla, about how we can also sympathize with what people. We're not approving by any means of what he's doing, but we understand kind of where he's lashing out because the symbiote is making him do that, but he's not real evil. It's like he's just very obnoxious and eventually gets to that point where he does physically abuse MJ.
He's nerd evil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
That is good to point out. You know what grinds my gears about the symbiote while we're talking about it? Is that random scientist that they just have in the movie that knows everything about it. Like he takes it to him and that guy's like, oh, it seems to be combining with your skin and it amplifies your emotions. How do you know that? It's from a meteor and you've looked at it for 5 minutes in a glass case.
Because of science.
Yeah, come on, Gabe. Are you anti-science now?
That seems like lazy screenwriting. And I'll tell you what else. we didn't even talk about it during the Sandman Spider-Man fight. The fact that they happen to have the fight on top of a truck carrying sand, and then he's able to create a super sand. This is the laziest screenwriting. I mean, how many sand trucks are in the middle of New York City? And where's the sand going?
One sand truck. They found it.
Where's that sand going?
In whole New York City, there's one sand truck, and it conveniently drives by.
It was probably the same sand that he fell into originally, and they were just like, well, we probably better get this out here before we get a lawsuit.
Oh, God, I don't know who that guy was. Let's get this sand the hell out of here.
Get rid of the evidence.
That's the best thing I've ever heard. We got to get rid of that sand. We thought it was a bird. It was a guy. They're going to catch us.
Where was that at? What were they doing? And why were they doing it 2 a.m. at night? Have we figured that out yet?
I don't remember what they called it. Didn't they call it quantum something? It's like the same stuff, I think, that happened to Bruce Banner.
Okay.
Writing doesn't matter. Plot doesn't matter. We just got to get from A to B, T-Man. I don't care if we have to put a sand truck in the middle of New York City.
The more I think about it, I know we're way ahead of that now, but that sequence of Sandman falling into that out of just nowhere. And like they're doing some weird science. The more I think about it, it is so ridiculous. And they're like, it's just a bird. I know we're way ahead of it. But I just have to.
That was my favorite part. I'm like, you're seriously just gonna assume it's a bird? You're not even gonna check. Like, why don't they have cameras out there? Something.
They could have cared less. They're like,
runs into a massive hole. Like a massive hole. Like he's not looking at all, apparently, like ever in front of him.
That guy was, we've all been there at work where you got that older person who's just burnt out. That's what that guy was. He just left.
Yes.
Well, maybe I can edit this so I can cut all this out and then paste it in where it goes.
I think this works because this is like the plot of the film. I think that's why I'm having trouble like keeping my brain of where we're at, because the plot is so all over the place.
I was just going to say, it is very convoluted. There's just too much going on. There's too many storylines. I mean, it really could have been two movies.
And I have to bring this up. I forgot to bring it up earlier, and I'm sorry, and you can totally cut it off if you don't want to use it. But the fight scene between Harry and Peter when they are going through the alleyway that we were talking about, I forgot this was one of the first Spider-Man 3D movies. And did y'all notice how they were like throwing things at the camera just for that scene? Yes. It doesn't happen like anywhere else in the movie, but like the whole ring shot where he's like trying to grab the ring from, with his web and everything. It was so cheesy. And then I was like, why is this happening? And then it dawned on me that was the era when 3D movies were coming out.
Yeah, that's good.
I was wondering that, Kayla, because I noticed that a couple times, like in the late, not in that sequence, but later.
There were a couple moments where it's just like, whoa, they were trying to make it look like they're gonna hit you, and I was like, oh my god.
Yeah, I was like, I was loving it. I was like, heck yeah, I love 3D. I put on my 3D glasses. I don't even have a 3D TV. That's how much I was into it. But yeah, it was really obvious.
Guys, the same thing happened to me this week when I popped Jaws 3 3D in. I was like, why are all these things coming at the TV? I was like, what's going on? And then I remembered 3D. So it could happen to anybody, Kayla.
I hated those early 3D movies, though.
They kind of stopped that. People got burnt out on those real quick. But I really
enjoyed it. Nauseous.
Yeah, that's true. There's only a few that worked really well. Like the first
Avatar. I think this is one of them, though. I think I saw this in 3D. I think this one was okay.
The 3D, only a few movies works really well. This one probably. But like Avatar, it works great for. But not many do.
Yeah.
Do y'all want to keep going back to the beginning
of
the movie?
Let's keep doing that. Let's just start completely over.
Let's just start completely over.
What's that little thing in the credits called?
Symbi bot.
The symbiote?
Yeah, let's go back to the symbiote.
We've been talking about it.
All right, now we're down to two listeners.
And neither one of them are bikers or heavy metal people.
Gabe hates bikers and heavy metal. That's one thing I learned about. They are pure evil.
No, don't get me canceled. I like bikes. I'm thinking about getting a bike, and I love me some heavy metal.
You think they're going to accept you into their biker club after you just called them pure evil?
I meant bad, like cool bad.
Okay.
Heck yeah,
it's
bad
like
to the bone.
It's like when you call a girl fat, but you're like, but pH fat.
Yeah,
like cool. Hey,
that's what I meant.
Gabe, just say bop, and it'll all be for you.
All right, motorcycle guys, bop.
There we go. Okay, so Sam Raimi intended all of what I'm about to go over to start to be the climax of the movie, although really we just went over the climax of the movie with the whole jazz scene. Aunt May tries to be the voice of reason for Peter. We've got the black substance turning Eddie into Venom, who then kidnaps MJ. We find out Sandman is still alive, putting water on him, didn't work. And then Peter tries to get Harry to help save MJ. So what do we think about these handful of scenes right here?
Well, real quick, I just got to go backwards in time. One more time, Wes, I swear. But to the, the diner sequence, when Harry and he's like, yeah, MJ's with me now. I forgot how bad that sequence was. And then remember, he's like, you want some pie? Like, what is going on in this sequence? It's so awful.
I stole your woman, but you'd like some pie?
Yeah, the pie, he's like, so good. Anyway, so good. But fast forward to the end sequence. Yeah, this is getting into the WWE Rumble like Gabe talked about.
Be remiss if I didn't talk about convenience here again. He just happens to go into a church and get the bell to take the venom off of him, and just so happens the guy that hates him is there standing underneath the bell to catch the venom.
Well, I mean, hilarious because he prays that God would kill Peter Parker, and then magically Peter Parker winds up in the church tower.
I love it. I love that. I love when Spidey gets the suit back out. That did give me goosebumps. I was like, heck yeah, we're ready to roll. I would be remiss if I didn't mention another thing that I want to talk about is Tobey Maguire's crying face. Like, he cries a hell of a lot in this movie, and it's a lot of tears and some really crazy faces. I don't know what is happening when he's crying, but man, I am all in every time Toby starts crying.
We were talking about Kim Kardashian earlier. It's the same as her cry face. I mean, it's just stood a decade on its own.
it's like he could retire off that crying face. Like, it is so great.
Okay, so hear me out here. All right, one of my favorite things in the movie, he's got this pep talk from Aunt May, doesn't know yet that MJ's been kidnapped, finds out MJ's been kidnapped, okay? So love of his life, the woman he wants to marry, she's been taken by what turns out to be two villains. You'd think Spidey would be in a little bit of a rush to go save her, as time would certainly be of the essence. But nope. He heads back to his apartment. He slowly gets his suit out. He has a coming to terms moment with himself. He then heads to save her, right? Nope. Then he spends the next couple of hours trying to convince his friend to help him. Would Mary Jane not be dead by this point? Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was also going to talk about, like, how long she was hanging out in those webs.
Well, it's because he was taking his sweet time getting there. It would be like somebody coming to me and be like, Wes, you know, your wife's been kidnapped, and me being like, man, that really sucks. Pencil that into my schedule next week, and I'll look into it.
Well, the screenwriter, Wes, had to figure out a way to get James Franco's heartwarming butler speech in, you know, where he tells James Franco about his love for him. In between that, he was like, how am I going to get this butler speech in here? He's going to have to go home and get his suit.
No. Well, to their defense, Wes, because I agree with everything you're saying. It is, when you think of it logically like that, it's like, what in the world? But they've got to get the tension going. You got to have the hero, like the scene where they're doing the camera spin around. And I think he's crying again in that scene, actually. He opens the suitcase and he gets the suit out. It's pretty awesome. I'm ready to go. By that point, I'm up on my feet. I'm cheering for Spidey.
Okay, but meanwhile, MJ is just chilling in this taxi in this net that probably, if a firefighter had tried, could have rescued her by that point.
Definitely.
You know,
one of the audience members that are just hanging out down there at the bottom, like the studio audience, some of them could have climbed up there and got her down.
Absolutely. And then as the fight is going on, she's just progressively becoming more and more of a damsel in distress. I mean, falling, she's like in the taxi, and then the whole cinder blocks fall in the taxi, and then she falls out of the taxi, and then I think she falls through the web about three separate times. Meanwhile, they're fighting, I think it was Sandman. I don't even think Venom was involved yet, but I just kept sitting there going, can you just save yourself for 5 seconds, MJ?
Yeah, they give her
just
no.
Just hold on tight.
Yeah, just do something, MJ, except just falling every time. They give her no HCL.
Screaming.
Well, I do like how whenever Spider-Man gets there, in the web, and I guess Venom has done this, it says, Spider-Man, stop us if you can.
Such a comic book thing.
What am I going to write? I'll get you. No, that's a little over the top.
And then what about all those people? Wes, I think you mentioned it. Like, what are they all doing? What are those cops doing? What are those firefighters doing? Nothing, apparently.
It bugged me so much.
We have a Royal Rumble going on, but I like the battle within the battle, the white webs versus the black webs. They're slowly like eating each other, and then there's a scene where they're shooting each other. It's a pretty intense battle.
Well, I mean, no one is scared. No one's running for their lives. Everybody's just watching. Like, again, we're at a WWE event. I'm surprised they didn't have like concession stands open and everything like that watching this big battle.
What about the British reporter? Like, they keep cutting back to her.
Oh, yeah.
And she's
and
like,
the reporter on TV.
Yeah, and the reporter. I don't
can't
think
take this much gonna... longer, guys.
Yes, I was like, what? How much more can we take? And the guy's like, I think this is it for Spider-Man.
You know, it's a good fight scene if you've got two reporters reporting the fight.
Yeah, like I've never seen that in a climax of a movie though, where they kept going back to it. It was almost like with Sam, like thinking, I don't think the audience has any idea what's going on, which we didn't. People.
They were delaying for Harry's grand entrance, you know, because he went and talked to Harry and he was trying to convince him to come help him. And then he had to go by himself and he's been pinned down. He's being held back by Venom and being crushed by Sandman. And we all think hope is lost. And then Harry flies in on his little Green Goblin jetpack thing.
How
did he become the hero?
I don't know, but. What about Venom? Like when Brock like becomes him, how ridiculous is he?
Oh my god, it's the best. He has like fangs and everything. Like his teeth even get messed up.
Like he's right. That's what I was gonna say. Like he got some. They really messed up his teeth. Like he had some good teeth. I'd have been happy with it. And then like I would have been pissed
right
about
hair.
It.
He had some good teeth.
He had good teeth. Venom screwed up his whole dental plan.
Well, and then this is when Topher Grace's character just gets ridiculously terrible because he's sitting there and like crawling up to Spider-Man. He goes, it feels so good to be bad.
Yes. So ridiculous. Like that whole Venom character and arc is so bad. And if you really think about it, like the real Venom only shows up for like the last 20 minutes of the movie.
I'm sitting here watching all of this is unfolding. And the thought that's going through my mind, man, this is the slowest rescue of all time.
Right? And they kept cutting back to MJ, just like one more little sprig of the web, just ping, and then her falling more and more.
They had to draw it out. It is like a 40-minute climax.
Yep.
It is really long.
Well, it's two villains. I mean, they have to give room for them to both have their moment, you know?
And you had to give James Franco his arc.
I'm gonna just say this. We've talked about Venom quite a bit, but during this last battle, I looked away for a minute, and then I looked back because I got bored, and I looked back at the screen. And then I felt like I was in The Mummy for a bit, because with all that sand going around, I was like, did I fall asleep, and now I'm watching The Mummy?
Yeah, he came out of nowhere, and I think it was, wasn't it that one sand truck, or was it like the random sand pit in the middle of New York?
The random sand pit in the middle of New York. That's where those trucks were going.
Remember, and he had like tires and rocks and stuff built within him. And once again, Sandman, we have no idea who he is, where he came from. He's just this huge sand creature with no like real character to him. And like, you just don't really feel anything for him.
Or who Venom is, or where he came from, or what a Venom is, just besides an emo Peter. We don't know really anything about these villains.
It seems like the bigger he gets, the dumber he gets too.
Yes. Like he's making like groggy sounds.
Yeah, he's like,
I forgot about the groggy sounds.
Like what? And then it goes into, he explains his whole thing. He's like, I didn't mean to kill your uncle. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Once again, they revised what they just revised earlier.
You get a triple twist, T-Man. It really wasn't the main guy. It was this other guy. And it really wasn't me. I was forgetting. Right.
By the end of that last twist, I if you ask me right now who killed Uncle Ben, I could tell. I have no idea.
I think it was some random guy that bumped his elbow and made the gun shoot. I don't know, but that'll probably be in Spider-Man 4. Don't worry, guys.
Well, apparently the hijacker who was screaming from the car the whole time somehow also bumped his elbow and made the trigger go off. So
maybe this is a story not about him as a villain. Maybe it's a story about gun safety. If he had the safety on, everybody would have been fine.
All right, so as we wind this movie down, like you guys said, Sandman apologizes to Peter. Harry dies from his wounds, and they have a funeral for him. And then the movie ends with MJ singing at a nightclub and her and Peter kind of make up and do a dance and stuff. So is there anything with this just last little bit of the movie? How do you think it ends?
One thing I noticed real quick is at the funeral, why was Gwen Stacy and the chief of police there? Like, Harry? It was so weird. Anyway, that's one thing I noticed right off the bat. I'm like, oh, what?
They're all one big family.
I know we've been talking about MJ's feelings a lot, but I got to say this. Peter is a really shitty best friend, too. Like, no joke, he clotheslines and kills Peter once, then he kills him again. He kills his dad. He doesn't pay any attention to him.
Deformed his face.
He deforms his face. He's a really bad best friend and a really bad boyfriend. Maybe we should just be talking about how, like, I don't know. I don't think Peter's the hero in this. Maybe the sand guy. I think I was rooting for the sand guy at the end.
Don't forget when Harry is dying, MJ's the one sitting with Harry. Peter's taking his sweet time chatting with the Sandman, not rushing off to check on his best friend who got stabbed.
Great point, Kayla. Hey, let me chat with this guy who killed my uncle. Well, not really. Psych.
Rather than be with my supposed best friend as he takes his last breath.
Is it time? Let me just throw this out there to you all. Is it time to cancel Spider-Man?
Just those first three. I don't know. They still have a warm place in my heart. The new ones are the best, though.
I think cancel the third one. The first two were fine. We'll leave those. We can cancel the third one, though. If this podcast doesn't get canceled first.
Yeah, we're trending in that direction. I was disappointed by the last scene. Like, I know they made up, that was great, but I always liked how in the Sam Raimi Spider-Mans, he ends on him, like, swinging through New York. I was really thinking they were going to do that again, and they didn't. I was surprised about that.
Let me tell you what I was hoping for there, Tommy. The dance scene was awkward, but what I was hoping for is just a little speck of that juice was still on him, and it turned Peter emo, and then all of a sudden he did one of those gun points at MJ, and she turned emo, and they started doing another jazz dance, but this time it was together. They were all doing a jazz dance, and the little stuff got on everybody, and everybody's emo.
What?
I like that ending. I like that. Sign me up for that ending.
Yeah, well, first, like a little speck of the goblet or whatever she called it got on him. And then he shot one of those air guns at Gwen Stacy, and the air gun turned her emo. And then he just kept doing air guns, and everybody kept turning emo. And it was just a big emo dance party.
And then the last little shot, it zooms in on his mouth, and he goes, "Dig on this."
End.
That would have been a much better ending.
Yeah, I would have clapped. I would have stood up in my chair and clapped.
I also really loved how all the Spider-Man movies, well, the Sam Raimi's, always had to end on like an emo early 2000s rock song. And then this one, if you notice, I played through the whole credits. He has like three of those in there. Like, they didn't even play the whole one. They just kept cutting. It's like, do y'all remember the first one? I think it was Dashboard Confessional. I think that was the first.
I forgot they existed.
Yep, straight emo. The second one, was it, I think it was Nickelback.
Oh, of course it was.
Yeah, it was.
Okay, so the last thing we're going to do here is we'll just go round table. Everybody just give your final thoughts and then tell the audience, guilty pleasure, good movie, or this movie sucks. Kayla, you're our guest of honor. Kick us off.
Okay, I went into this thinking, oh my gosh, I love this movie. I'm going to fight for it. But honestly, after watching back through it, I don't know if I've just matured or didn't age well, but it's definitely a guilty pleasure movie. I mean, I probably will never watch it again. I might pull up the emo scene because that was the best part in the whole movie. But aside from that, it was just kind of wah-wah.
All right. Gabe?
Talk about your star-making performances, Tommy, all you want. Peter Parker's emo is a star-making performance if I've ever... I think we bring that into the podcast. Star-making performance meter. Peter Parker nailed it there. It's not a good movie. I'm not going to... I was rooting for you, Kayla. it is a movie. And it definitely was I can't say it was a pleasure. So, part of the emo scene is a 10 out of 10 on the guilty pleasure-o-meter. The rest of the movie, I could drop it.
So you just feel guilty for watching it?
Yes.
Okay. All right, T-Man, what you got?
So I would say, first, I got to build off what Gabe said. So I know I do love talking about star-making performances. I wouldn't call this or that role a star-making performance. I would call it a little something different. This is a new category I saw. Career-killing performance? I think that's what that classifies as. When it comes to the movie, this is an interesting one, I think. It's not quite a guilty pleasure, because it's not one I'm really going to go back to much at all. But it is really interesting. Like, it's a lot more interesting. I don't think we can call it a bad movie. Like, it's a lot more interesting than that. Like, bad movies to me are ones that are just so dull and just not well made at all. This one is very well made, and there's just so much oddity to it. So I don't even know how to classify it. I'm just going to have to keep thinking on it. But it's not really a guilty pleasure, but I wouldn't call it a really bad movie either. It's just something unique to itself.
Honestly, if you listen to this podcast and watch it, I think you will really enjoy it. And I was able to watch it because I know how to do it.
I will say it has a lot more. It's just so there's so much to it and there's so much craziness in it. It's one of the movies you can rewatch it and just enjoy just by rewatching it, like laughing at it in a way.
My husband watched it with me and he hates anything that strays from the original comics. So he had trashed on this movie forever. And when he watched it back through, he was like, I actually really enjoyed it. You know, not having any expectations for it. Just going in thinking, oh, this is going to be horrible. But he actually ended up liking it. So I say guilty pleasure.
I enjoyed watching the movie because I was having so much fun picking out all the craziness for us to talk about on this podcast. That was my serious take on it. I really do not like this movie. I did not like it the first time that I saw it, and I really didn't like it this time either. I do think that the points that were brought up tonight, T-Man, especially by you, it is interesting. It is something unique. It definitely doesn't fit into the new Marvel comic universe or even, you know, with Batman and some of these other movies. So it's definitely an oddity. I think I'm good for the rest of my life on the limit of watching Spider-Man 3 at 2. I'm good right there. So I'm not going to say that the movie sucks, but I am going to say I don't think it's a good movie and I can't recommend it.
Do you think Sam Raimi was going for like what he did in Army of Darkness, T-Man? Like where he was trying to do something just so different that it just ended up with this?
Not exactly. I think with Army of Darkness, he knew what he was doing. They knew the tone they were going for. This one, I don't know if they ever landed on the exact tone. And like I said, I think there is some truth to the fact that he was really mad about being forced these characters and he wasn't happy about making... This was not the movie he wanted to make, and I think it shines through.
Kayla, seriously, that's such a pleasure to have you on the show. That was a lot of fun. And
Thank you.
You are a great sport as we picked on... this movie that you and your husband kind of, you know, enjoy and think it's a guilty pleasure. But if you will, tell the audience again, tell them where they can find your podcast and where can they keep up with you on social media?
Yeah. So you can find me. I have all the social medias. I have a Facebook group, Strikes My Fancy Podcast. I have an Instagram, Strikes My Fancy Pod. Twitter is Strikes Me Fancy because somebody took my handle. And so I had to go a little Irish over there. And then I'm on Apple, Spotify, even YouTube. The quickest way to get to any of my stuff is just to go to my Linktree. It's Linktree/StrikesMyFancy. So you can find me there.
Well, there you go. And again, audience, we just recommend that you go and check out more of Kayla's material, interact with her on social media. Our audience, you guys have been amazing. Thank you so much for the support. downloading our show, interacting with us on social media. And for those who are new, we're trying to grow our podcast and reach a larger audience. A couple of things you can do to support our effort. Number one, subscribe to our show and leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcast directory. You can follow us on social media. We're on Twitter at Real, R-E-E-L, underscore cast. We're on Facebook, Real Talk, a movie podcast page. And finally, if you have a suggestion for an episode of our show, you know, something that you want to hear, send us an email with those details. And you can send that to realtalkmoviecast@gmail.com. And for us, that's a wrap.